Good afternoon, everyone. This is what you have to do when they're actually recording your session. You just have to, hold on. Let me do it again because they're going to edit this. Good afternoon, everyone. No, I'm just joking. Thank you so much for being here today. Appreciate you guys so much. You guys had a great day so far? Excellent. Well, you know, I get to be on the tail end pretty much of the breakout day after you've had your lunch. Wasn't lunch really good? That was really, really good. That was not camp food or retreat food. That was like good food. So I really appreciate that. Really thankful to be with you today. And thanks to Jacqueline and the team for the invitation to come and share with you guys. So I'm going to do my best to interact with you guys during the session because I know what it's like. Whether you invite someone at the tail end of youth camp or retreat, it's like that last kind of like service that you just got to like push through and just get through. If you sleep, I promise you, our rule on camps and retreats is we normally dump water over people's heads. We won't do that to you. But I do encourage the neighbor behind you or next to you to nudge you maybe if I do cause you to fall asleep or the wonderful food that you ate. But I have the privilege of being able to share with you guys last session today on youth ministry. As long as I don't fall over here. I like to walk a little bit. So I'm going to actually just come up here and I'm going to venture back and forth between my PowerPoints here. Well, you guys are obviously here for a reason in this session, and I'll give you a little bit about my background in just a minute. But I had a very interesting conversation. I'm going to share some stories with you throughout this session. I was with a youth pastor that is part of our network in our city in Brampton, and he comes from the largest church in our city. They have about just over 3,000 on a Sunday. And he's the new youth pastor. He's only been in there for now maybe 3 or 4 months. And we just happened to get on the topic of multicultural youth ministry. Because his church, which is a primarily ethnic church, is led by white pastors. And he is white as well. And he just graduated Bible college, and he was telling me this story of some of his friends that he graduated with, and they said to him, I'm not sure if I should use real names. I think I will use real names. Nick, he said, you know, I don't know how you can do it to be able to go back to Brampton after being outside of the GTA for Bible college and go and lead a multicultural youth ministry. I could never do it. We could never do it. So our conversation started with this whole thing of Nick coming back into Brampton where he went to school and was born and raised to pastor in his own hometown, which is quite a privilege for him. But at the same time, numerous friends saying, I can never do what you're doing. So I say that to say that you are obviously here in this session because wherever you pastor wherever you're leading in your ministry, whatever town it is, whatever city that it is, there's something that resonates inside of you to desire to see God do something significant in the area of having a multicultural youth ministry. So my name is Jason Prasad. And I count it really an honor to be here. I don't consider myself an expert in this area, but I do have some experience in this area for a few reasons that I'll share with you. And it's interesting because on this topic, there is not a lot of research in North America on this. There are YouTube videos of pastors preaching about how to develop a multi-ethnic or multicultural church. There are some articles and things that if you were to Google and find and do research. I was quite challenged over the last number of months when I was invited to come to really try to thoroughly search what was out there. And there's not a whole lot. Fuller Youth Institute down in the States has developed some resources for it, but it's really not extensive. And this is an issue that even large ministries are looking to tackle even right now. My wife's also in ministry. Let me talk about that first. I'm married. I've been married for 15 years. I have my wife's also a pastor. She's been a pastor longer than me, actually. even though I did go to Bible college and graduated Bible college, God took me through this interesting journey of working in the secular work field for a number of years and doing part-time ministry for the first 10 years after I graduated. Now, who goes to Bible college to spend the next 10 years of their life doing part-time ministry? I don't, maybe a few of you have, but that wasn't my initial plan. But I look back and I see the journey that God took me on. So she's been in ministry longer than me in that full-time capacity. I have two great kids. My daughter is 12 and my son is 9. I personally come from a multi-ethnic background. Let me play a little game here. How many of you can guess what I am? Now, let me just say this. In this environment, I probably will not be politically correct with you or sensitive, even though I'm going to be talking about some things. For the sake of tackling something that's significantly very important, that the church has not really tackled very well, I'm going to tackle it in this session. Is that okay? So if I offend you, I want to apologize in advance. Please come and speak to me after. I'm okay to repent, get on my knees and say sorry. But for the sake of our conversation, and I really want this to be a conversation that we can really talk about some things that are very important in youth ministry. So, guess. What do you think I am? South Asian? No. South American? Half, but now you need to guess the country. Anybody else? Guyana, yes, okay. Who's this good? I should have brought some treats. Actually, I got Kit Kats in here. You see, this is one of those youth sessions. You got to treat the leaders as well. So I'm Guyanese, and then the other half, guess. Sorry? Nope. I'll give you one more time because, you know, it just...
Egyptian?
Not Egyptian, no. I'm German and Guyanese. All right? And most people don't know what I am because when they look at me, I don't resemble a Guyanese person because of my skin color, right? The only hint to what I might be is my last name, Prasad. And people go, oh, is he South Asian? Is he Indian? Well, my great-great-grandparents came on a boat in the late 1890s to Guyana. So technically, I am Indian. Technically, I am Guyanese. And I am German. And I'm, you know, and I don't say this proudly, but I say it because it's part of who I am. You know, on my mom's side, my mom was born and raised in Germany. My grandfather, who is white, served as a Nazi in World War II. My grandfather was racist. He was an atheist. And when my mom got pregnant with my older brother, they hid that for the first 8 months because breaking the news that my mom was pregnant at the age of 18 and then to a dark brown guy wouldn't have gone over very well with my grandfather. But over time, he obviously accepted us. But that didn't stop challenges within the family. My wife, Carrie, she's from New Brunswick, born and raised. She is Irish and Scottish. So a little bit of a mixture in there. So my kids who look, my son looks very white. My daughter tans very well. So one day they're going to go, what are you? And she's going to be able to explain. I'm Scottish, Irish, German, Guyanese. And my son is, they're going to look at him and say, oh, you're white, so you must be Canadian. Well, what is Canadian? Right? But he's really white, trust me, okay? So it's just very interesting. We have this tan child and this, like, really, really white child. And so that's just a little bit about my personal story for my family. My history in ministry is I got saved at the age of 9 and a half. My dad became a Christian when I was 8 and a half, went to church, never went to church. Our experience growing up as kids was we didn't go to church. We went to Catholic church. Sort of like Christmas and Easter and other sort of times my parents felt like going to church. And then there was the Nazarene pastor that lived a few doors down that built relationship with my dad, invited us to come to the Saturday program. And in between that, we went to the witch doctor every so often in the middle of the week so my parents could be part of some voodoo celebrations of them cutting off birds off heads and different types of things. That's how I grew up. So I remember going to the witch doctor at different times and sitting outside the room and hearing the screams of different animals. That's my upbringing. So when it comes to sort of a weird dynamic of growing up, that was my dynamic. I was born in Scarborough, raised in Scarborough, Markham, Pickering. Was always, not always, but after Scarborough, when we moved in different areas, was always one of the first ethnic kids in my school. When we moved to Markham, now I'm 46 years old. I know I might not look like it, but I am. But anytime we moved outside of the Scarborough area, I was always one of the minority kids that went to the school. And so there are some sensitivities that I have because of my culture, because people could never really identify that I have or like who I am. And with that being said, so grew up in a very, very large church where my dad got saved in Scarborough, just over 2,000 people. Then we moved to Pickering and went to a church that in a community that was growing but was predominantly white. And then went to a high school where I was probably one of 30 kids. And most people didn't know what I was. They thought I was actually white, actually. They were like, we don't know what you are. You're like white. But I was one of 30 kids in a school of over 1,000 that was a minority. 2 years, Scarborough moved in, and then we went through major racial wars in our school. And that's a whole other topic that has something to do with youth ministry, but doesn't really have a whole lot to do with youth ministry. Why is this important? I'm just sharing a little bit about my journey because our conversation today reflects my experience. Even though I don't consider myself a expert in this area, our experiences shape who we are. Our experiences shape our viewpoint of how we see things. And so with that being said, growing up, went out to ministry. I went to school in the United States, just outside of Providence, Rhode Island, where everyone thought I was Puerto Rican. So all the Puerto Rican students heard that I was from Canada and just thought I was automatically from New York anyway and spoke Spanish. So can you imagine, you know, you're mixed and everyone wants to talk to you Puerto Rican. And, you know, and then in this environment in school, where a great Bible school back then was about, you know, maybe 400 or 500 students, but yet racism that I experienced in the United States was more blatant than being in Canada, where we're very, very quiet about it, even though we have prejudice and racism in our country. And so from there, I came back to Canada, and as I mentioned, I spent 10 years working in this secular field in a number of levels of management. While doing that, I traveled itinerantly for the first 3 years of ministry, and that was really cool. You get the best of both worlds. You get to come in and preach and then just leave and leave the mess for the youth pastor to clean up. It's really good. And then I spent 4 years as a youth pastor with two different Korean churches, a Presbyterian church in Scarborough and then a Korean Pentecostal church in Toronto near York University. And that really was the beginning of my pastoral ministry experience working in a Korean church. Wow, cross-cultural ministry. What a shocker. I got to be honest with you on the get-go. What a revelation of how stereotypes also develop inside of us without even knowing as well. And it's quite interesting because that was part of my ministry experience. And then from there, I ended up moving to Brampton, where Brampton was and is one of two most ethnically diverse communities in the entire country, and working for a phenomenal church plant that just began to explode and grow. It was just unbelievable what God was doing in the church, not only in growth, but even different cultures coming in. And then from there, moved to New Brunswick for a couple years, where my wife was from, and had another cultural revelation. And I remember standing, you know, in Brampton, you can stand at the celebration on Canada Day and go, hey, I fit in. This is great. The whole world is here. But when we moved to New Brunswick in 2010, and we were standing out in an area called Meehan's Cove, and there were 5,000 people out there, and I went, hey, I'm the only brown person with the only Korean lady out here in amongst 4,998 Caucasian people. I went, wow, I'm a minority. And my wife, who's white, went, this is really weird, because now I'm the majority out here. So I share that to share some experience with you. And then coming back to Brampton in 2011, I spent 5.5 years as the Brampton Area Program Director for Youth for Christ, Youth Unlimited Toronto, and worked with a phenomenal team that was ministering and doing outreach programs in the community. So I've taken a little bit of time to sort of introduce myself because I need you to understand the context of where I'm coming from today. And I think helping understand context is really going to help our conversation today. So let me just share just a couple things with you. So before I really get into talking about the headaches, the hazards, and the highs of pastoring a multicultural youth ministry, I think it's absolutely important for us to talk about the foundation that comes actually before building youth ministry. And that's this: cultural sensitivity. Have you guys ever heard that terminology before? Cultural sensitivity. A more academic term to that is cultural IQ. And one of the things that I've come to realize with us just as human beings, every one of us in this room don't have it 100% being culturally sensitive. Even though I've grown up in a very diverse family, and that was just my immediate family, Guyanese people like to intermarry with a lot of different people. So I have Spanish, I have Chinese, I have Filipino, I have Italian, Bajan, Jamaican, Cayman, like you just name it. And our family, when you come to a family gathering or a party, it is very, very quite diverse. And if I can just say this boldly but quite humbly to you, I feel like I have an advantage over most people because I can see through different cultural eyes because of how I've grown up. I can see a white person's perspective, and I can see a West Indian person's perspective. Not just Guyanese, but even though Guyana's in South America, it's really West Indian. Like Guyanese, you know, Trinis, Jamaicans, like we're all sort of, you know, grouped in the same thing. But my experience working in a Korean church shaped another level of viewpoint that I never had. Having friends of different cultures growing up helped me to understand some things. But I want to give you a couple definitions of cultural sensitivity that I found and I liked. There's a number of different definitions, all right? And it's this. Cultural sensitivity is a set of skills that enables us to learn about and understand people who are different from ourselves, thereby becoming better to serve them within their own communities. That is a, I know you can't see it here, a Penn State study that they did of cultural sensitivity in the workplace. And if you want, I'm more than happy to send you some of the slides, just some of these things. The second one that I found that I liked as well is being aware that cultural differences and similarities between people exist without assigning them a value, positive or negative, better or worse, right or wrong. And it's interesting because in Acts chapter 10, and this one I'm going to just focus here on as a foundational scripture. Acts chapter 10, verse 34 and verse 35. And it says this: Then Peter began to speak. I now realize how true it is that God does not show favoritism, but accepts men from every nation who fear him and do what is right. The interesting thing about this passage is this. Peter, this is his whole experience with Cornelius. Do you guys remember that story? All right? But on one end, Peter's a little bit of a hypocrite. Because if you look back to Acts chapter 6, when they were having issues, you know, distributing, taking care of the widows that were Gentiles and Jews, we all know from that passage that the Jewish widows were getting a little bit of extra and a little bit of more than the Gentiles were. Do you guys remember that passage? And a whole problem just blew up in their faces where they were like, okay, let's choose 7 men to distribute so we can focus on this. But what it didn't do, it really didn't solve the problem of cultural sensitivity, a little bit of prejudice, maybe a little bit of racism involved in that as well, right? And we all know by this story, when God sent Peter here to speak to Cornelius and to pray for the Holy Spirit to come and fill them, we all understand in this story that Peter, based on this scripture, was like, whoa, now I understand that everyone is equal and there's no difference between us. So the early church experienced people that were not culturally sensitive, even though they had the gospel. Have you ever met someone that was a believer, a Christian, a professing Christian, and they made insensitive remarks? I've been one of them. I'm just being honest with you. Either we all have or we thought it in some way. And what's interesting is that The church has not tackled this effectively. I got this from Fuller Youth Institute. It says this: while young people in our nation are growing increasingly diverse, most ministry approaches and resources have not adapted. They've not. So let me give you an example. My wife just recently attended, and I'm not trying to sell out any of these ministries, but I'm trying to help you understand the challenge that ministry is facing in the area of youth ministry. My wife went recently to the Orange Tour that Andy Stanley's church puts on through Ready Joiner, all that kind of stuff. Phenomenal curriculum. Is there anyone here that uses that curriculum? Orange curriculum? When Orange first came out a number of years ago, it was all white people. And you're trying to take good, solid teaching and put it in a context where most of the audience is not white. And it was interesting because this past October, last month, my wife's gone down for the last 4 or 5 years. And they invited, Canadians to come to the special sessions. I would encourage you sort of get a little bit of VIP treatment being a Canadian, because only like 10 to 15 Canadians actually show up to this. But she was invited, actually anyone that was part of an urban church, which we consider ourselves in Brampton, were invited to a special meeting. And only 15 people showed up, and 7 were from our team. Over 1,000 people at this 2-day conference, and 7 out of the 15 were our church. And Reggie Joyner said this, and I'm not, please don't quote me for verbatim on this, but Reggie Joyner said, "We've done a tremendous job serving the suburban church, but we've not done a good job serving the urban church." And if you've noticed, and if you've done the Orange curriculum over the last couple years, they begin to integrate different cultures in their teaching, realizing that there is an audience that they are completely missing. And Andy Stanley's church is diverse and multicultural. I've met some of their team and have had conversations with their team. But yet, their curriculum, their video series, did not display the diversity that they had in their church, which brings me to this, is cultural count is not an indication of cultural sensitivity. So sometimes our churches are, and our youth ministries, and this is where I'm going to begin to move into some youth ministry stuff here, our youth ministries might be diverse because of the neighborhoods where our church is, the demographic that lives around us, and by default, we're multicultural. By default, we attract certain types of people because some people might not have access to vehicles or different types of things in transit, or it's within walking distance, and that's their church. And as we all know, that one of the things that's keeping the church in Canada alive is the influx of immigration. Did you guys know that? That the church in Canada is not growing organically. It's only growing because of immigration coming into Canada. So those are, concerning statistics. So I'm not here to say that I have all the solutions. This is not an easy problem to actually solve in youth ministry, but we've all got to work together. And as the body of Christ, we need to step up and do this. So just want to share just a quick video with you. I think this is important because this is the kind of conversations we need to begin to have in our churches.
One in particular, I would think, is having a community and a body that is not silent about even the different subtle racist ways or biases that people can hold. What I mean by that is I think sometimes people can say things flippantly or just make little snarky remarks, whether it's about a different race or someone in a different sociological position than they might be, and people just let it slide, or it's just, well, that's just them, or that's just the culture they came from, or that's just how they grew up, or that's the things that their mothers used to say. But I think as a body and as a community, I think it's those little seeds that really work to harden our heart towards how we see people made in the image of God. And so I think one way that communities can work towards uprooting these kinds of things is simply calling sin sin and calling it out when you see it, gently, lovingly, with discernment. But I think we have to talk about those little things before we even get to the big ones. And so having a community that is honest, having a community that is confronting, having a community that is free to exhort and convict when needed and necessary, but also having an ear that is discerning to actually hear it in the conversations. And so being attentive, but not in a judgmental, self-righteous way, but in a, I want black people, I want white people, I want Hispanic, I want Asian, when they come into our body, I want them to feel safe. And I want them to know that they are welcome, and I want them to know that God loves them and loves us, and that He has made us all in His image and for His glory. And so, yeah, a community that is honest and willing to have those hard conversations and correct and confront sin when necessary.
So I show that video because I want to just jump on a conversation I had when I was a youth pastor in my second Korean church. And I was encouraging my students, hey, invite your friends, bring them from, you know, from school, blah, blah, blah. And finally, one of my students says to me, Pastor Jay, you don't understand. My parents don't want my non-Korean friends coming to this church. And I went, what? You gotta understand, I grew up multicultural. I came from some good churches. And then one of my students comes and gives me this revelation of, I have pressure from my parents to not invite my non-Korean friends to my church, to my youth ministry on Friday nights. Parents weren't even around. Now, I was also there Sunday afternoons running our youth service. You know, and if you've ever pastored cross-culturally, you know it's quite unique because even our English-speaking Koreans didn't like their Korean-speaking coming off what they call them fobs. I'm just telling you what they called them. You know, they never even associated with Korean-speaking kids that were coming right from Korea. They didn't like them. And I'm just like, hold on a second here. You should be helping them integrate. And but there was a cultural divide, even though they were first generations growing up in Canada. That, help me understand, some of you that come from more ethnic-based churches, is this not true between English-speaking kids growing up here and new kids coming from different countries? I was completely amazed and horrified all at the same time. And you see, these are the kinds of things that begin to shape you in ministry. These are the kinds of things that, you know, that I couldn't even go to my pastor and go and talk about because I would have caused a church split. They had actually just gone through a church split, and I'm going to go and make a big fuss about, hey, you need to talk to the board. You need to go talk to these. Let me have a parent meeting. I'm going to tell these parents straight. You know, it wasn't one of my youth leaders were like, I was just venting off to my youth leader, and he was like, no, you can't do that. Not in our culture, in our context. You don't do that to the eldership. I learned that very, very quickly. And one of the things that, I have a ton of notes here that I'm just going to go through quickly so I can really get into the meat of building this, is as the Church of Jesus Christ, we need to stand up and we need to lead the way, embracing all cultures and all people. And by you being here today, I believe that's your heart and that's your desire. Leadership, in most cases, needs to demonstrate and live a culturally sensitive lifestyle as well. We must be careful about what we say and what we do. This is particularly important in the area of cultural sensitivity. Our conversations must reflect the benefits of being culturally sensitive, because we need to understand it's the love of God flowing through us that will attract people. And I'm going to just skip a whole lot of stuff here to really get into the meat of what I want to talk to you guys about and why you came. So this was a youth leaders roundtable held in Chicago at one of the largest churches in America. You might recognize some faces. I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but I'm just using this as an example. This is a urban youth conference in the heart of Chicago at a very ethnically diverse church. Can you tell me the problem with this picture and this panel? It's all white. Absolutely. I would say the same thing if this was all black or another culture. But this was an ethnically diverse church of over 10,000 people or more. But yet in their youth conference, they all had white speakers. How, you know, so I have to, so you got to understand, I'm really passionate about this. Not just on this front, and I'm not trying to pick on this church or this conference or white people in general. What I'm trying to say is that we need to broaden our scope and we need to be sensitive and we need to be intentional of what we're trying to reflect and what we're trying to do. And you need to understand something. These are conversations that are happening with national ministries across our country. So I've been a part of those conversations. Just 2 weeks ago, I won't tell you the organization, phenomenal organization doing amazing work across our country. And they did a GTA pastor's retreat to talk about how we can continue to bring the church together to really reach the unchurched. And I'm sitting with 10 other pastors. And out of the 10 pastors, there was me. And there was one other pastor from a large Chinese church. And I brought it up and said, hey, if we're going to reach the GTA, and I said it very nicely, I said, this room does not represent the GTA. And I was very honest. I said, I'm half and half. I said, we have so-and-so here in the room who is Chinese, and the rest of everyone else is white. This does not represent Toronto. So, out of that conversation at the end of the retreat was, hey, can we provide a list of people that we have relationship with that as an organization we can begin to correct and begin to have conversations and invite them to be part of a larger table? National organization. That was one conversation. Earlier this year, I had another organization approach. Actually, I've been talking to this one other organization that's throughout the world and in Canada. And they were like, hey, you know, we come into cities and we do this, blah, blah, blah. And I just said, and I was being honest with them, I developed a great friendship. And let me just say this. We need to have conversations where we can develop great levels of relationship to have very authentic and very real conversations with people. So their youth director for Canada, I said, hey, I'll bring you in for something that I'm doing in the city that's great. Who do you have that reflects your speaking schedule that can come in and represent and speak in our city? And they had no one. And I just got a message 2 weeks ago from an organization saying that they've now invited people from different cultures to be part of this organization that's been traditionally white that ministers across our country. You see, there's great things that are happening across our country, but we need to be sensitive. There's great things happening in your churches as well. I believe they are. But we need to keep these things in mind. So, I thought I was going to have more time in this, but I have like a half hour left. I want to open up some time for Q&A in about 15 minutes. But I want to talk to you about what I did, what we did in Brampton to build our youth ministry to become multicultural. So I walked into this church 8 years ago when I started working with Youth for Christ, a church that had was taken over by my pastors 13 years ago, was founded by white Welsh pastors. But he loved Jamaica and did multiple missions trips a year to Jamaica. So anyone that moved to Canada in Brampton, Mississauga, that side, was like, hey, go to Pastor Morgan's church. So Pastor Morgan, he's passed away now, a very thick Welsh accent, just love the Jamaican people, love the West Indian people. And after 25 years, a white pastor was leading an all-black church of Africans and West Indians. So my pastor came and took over the church 13 years ago. The music was predominantly Caribbean. I know some of you don't have that music and you're wondering, what kind of music is that? Go on YouTube and type in Praise Break, Black Churches, all right? And you'll figure out what that is, all right? And so with that, when I took over the youth ministry, we had a church at that time of maybe just over 500, and we had 8 of our senior high students coming out to our youth ministry that were all from one culture, all black. Their style of music they loved was Caribbean music. That's all they liked. And part of my role was to take Hemorrhaging Faith. Have you guys ever heard of Hemorrhaging Faith? And to apply it in the local church and see if we could grow youth ministry with the recommendations of Hemorrhaging Faith, I'd encourage you to do it. We saw our youth ministry grow from junior and senior high kids, about 26 kids to 120 kids in a year and a half. So I encourage you, research and data works. And I remember our first prayer meeting, our youth gathering we did at someone's house. And I knew what I was walking into was a very mono-ethnic kind of church. And our first worship song, I wanted to begin to introduce them to new types of worship outside of the Jamaican, the West Indian, the African style of music. And what I had to do was I had to actually turn my computer around and play this song that some of you might actually be familiar with. And I'm just going to just... Do you guys know the song? Set a Fire. Amazing worship song. I love it. I'm into all different genres and styles of worship music. But the first time that I played that song that set me on a little bit of an alert was I played that for one of my leaders, and she goes, "We don't listen to white music." And I said to her, "Well, how do you define what's white, what's Jamaican, what's not?" I said, "To me, it is worship music." So I understood from the get-go that I was dealing with ignorance. Whether that was because of how they were raised, whether that was how they were developed. So now I not only need to revive an entire youth ministry that had not been doing well with physical participants, now I need to begin to shift the culture of some of the mindsets that we've had. So I actually, within 6 months, I shut down the entire youth ministry. Shut it down. And I just began to meet one-on-one with individual people that were in our church from different cultures. And, you know, it was, you know, so I met with a couple of our Malaysian boys from our church, you know. And I was just like, hey, I'm looking at rebranding and relaunching our youth ministry to do youth and young adults together. I'd like you to be part of the team. And you know what they said to me? They're Malaysian. You know, their mom's Chinese, their dad's Malaysian. And they said, I don't even know, they're the only Malaysian church, Chinese family in a church of 500. Can you imagine? But somehow they just felt this was their church. And they were like, we don't fit with those people. Did you hear the message? We don't fit with those people. Sort of like with Don Cherry the other week, right? Just, I don't have time to get into that because that's a whole other issue. Even though I personally was not offended, personally. But anyways. Okay, you're not shouting me down. All right, perfect. So with that being said, is I knew I was dealing with some things. And then I approached a couple of our Filipino girls that started coming to the church who I just, this is a bad stereotype, because I grew up with a lot of Filipinos. Most of them are musical. Either they play an instrument or they sing. So I went to them and I said, hey, do you sing and do you play an instrument? And they were like, yes, great. I need a worship team. And I'm like, so I remember when Nicole was in the hospital for heart surgery, I remember taking a couple songs like this and saying, hey, I want to rebrand and relaunch our youth ministry. Would you be willing to be a part of this? And this is where I want to go. So it was very interesting. I intentionally began to put together an ethnically diverse team from what it normally was. And I allowed the current leadership to make a decision if they wanted to be part of that. And I lost all nine out of 10 leaders. Didn't want to be a part of that. Do you know how hard that is when you're trying to restart youth ministry when it's not? More leaders showed up than students to our youth ministry. So with that being said, I'm just going to jump down here. I'm going to skip this. So music was a key part. I needed to begin to shift our music in our youth ministry from what our church was doing. Even if that would come with a cost and that would come with a price to pay, which I did pay in our area of leadership. And these are just some things. This is not an exhaustive list. These are just some examples of what we did in our youth ministry. The second thing is it was involvement. I invited those that were currently involved in leadership to be a part, but they didn't want anybody else to be involved. Especially from different backgrounds. Because it would mean that there would be different voices in the room and their entitlement would just diminish. One of the things that I began to look at is that all they did when they did comedy or fun games and opening nights were all West Indian and Jamaican jokes and things that only that West Indians understood. So if you were white, if you were Spanish, if you were from any other culture, you'd walk into a youth night and you wouldn't even know what jokes were happening and what all the other black kids were laughing at. As you can see, I'm being very direct and very honest here. This is for the conversation. So I needed to shift and begin to have some conversations. And it was interesting because when we started off and relaunched, I went from a Friday night to a Sunday night. I combined youth and young adults together as a way for us to relaunch. There was even no young adult ministry in the church, but I just needed to have a different strategy, which we felt this was God to do. And we began to shift some things. Then I needed to look at how do I build intentional relationships and community and among the group that was racially divided and didn't even know they were racially divided. Parents. Oh boy. Parents. I had parents that didn't like the fact that an all-black youth group was now being more diverse because of the potential of interracial dating, which did begin to happen. And then I began to hear it from parents on that. And I'll talk to you a little bit about that, how I had to navigate that. And then dating relationships. How do I navigate different? So parents is different than dating relationships. That's a whole other scope, because we're all raised differently. In some cultures are raised that the women serve the men. And the men are seen more as the dominant leader in the home, which I believe in, when the push comes to shove, I believe I'm responsible for my family. But my wife and I, we have a philosophy. We work in co-partnership together. So now we're trying to teach to our students that, if you're from this culture and that culture, that doesn't mean your girlfriend has to do everything you tell her she has to do. These are things that I'm dealing with, because in some cultures, that is prevalent. And then cultural dynamics. And when I talk about cultural dynamics, we're not just looking at, homes and experiences that people have been raised in, different countries that they were raised, new people to the country, whatever that might be, and how that shifts. So these are, I would say, the 7 top things that I had to begin to deal with in our youth ministry. But I had the benefit of it. Was my wife shifted into our what we call our junior department, or our children's pastor portfolio. And I was overseeing high school all the way up to college and university age. So we were speaking the same thing, believing the same thing, and on the same page. And our pastor was behind us 100% in this as well. So probably what I didn't have on this list is what we need to navigate. I had senior pastoral and board buy-in on this, which I know for some of you will be very, very difficult. Because I learned that by experience, in not just one church I was in, but a couple churches that I was in. So with that being said, these were some things that I had to navigate. So let me just stop here. And let's just open this up for some conversation. And I'm going to leave you with a few things of some takeaways, just to leave with you. Let me just say this. I don't think ministry can be defined by how many students you have. Okay? All we did in our church was begin to tackle some very real issues that were on the table, that Jackie Hill Perry talked about, that I had to address in love. You don't understand how many side one-on-one meetings, small group meetings, conversations with parents that I was working with Youth for Christ at the time, and I'm just like, I don't have time for this nonsense of having this person's not happy about this and have to call a small leadership meeting because of this. First year, 2 years was very, very, very challenging. But in that, we saw growth, and that was just engaging students inside the building of the church in trying to build an intentional community where everyone felt like they belonged. It was interesting. One of the new students to our church just recently asked me, what's our vision for our youth ministry? And I was like, great question. Now, the mission of our church is to lovingly guide people into an ever-growing relationship with Jesus Christ. That's the mission statement for our church. Everything we do in our ministry falls underneath that. But I said, we don't use that terminology. I said, the movement, that's what we call ourselves, is a place for students to experience God, authentic relationship, and a place where they belong. Just try to make it very, very simple. So regardless of culture, ethnicity, upraising, social, economic status, gender, we want it to be a place where students can come and they felt cared for and ministered to. And we just saw, the first year was hard. We relaunched our youth night with youth and young adults. We had 120 out, then 80, then 50. And then it sort of declined. And then we just built with a new core, and in a year and a half, built back up to a strong team and core that we had, where then we started doing our own retreats and different types of things. And then inviting other churches to be part of what we're doing, and we still do that. So these are just some of the things that we had to navigate and build in our own church context. Questions, thoughts, comments in your own context?